Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Stutter Talk. I'm Roisin McManus, one of your regular B-Team co-hosts, and I'm here with Karen Herring. Hey, Karen.
Hey, everyone.
And Joel Cordy.
Hello.
And this afternoon is the last day of the National Stuttering Association annual conference. It's Saturday around 5 o'clock. And this evening, we're lucky to have a very special guest here, Dhruv Gupta. Hey, Dhruv.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks for being on the show. Dhruv is the newly appointed executive director of the Indian Stammering Association, or TISA for short. And we're lucky to have him here just to sort of learn more about his story with stuttering and his work with TISA.
So. Great, yeah. No, well, first, just so I understand, I remember, I think you said this earlier, but why is it TISA instead of just ISA?
That's a good question. So since like the ISA like is already called the International Stuttering Association.
Okay.
So we saw that and said, okay, let's not call it ISA as well because it'll be confusing in the stuttering world. So we added a T.
Okay. Nice. But what does the TATIS stand for?
Oh, the.
Oh, the. Of course. All right.
I'm really glad you asked that because I asked someone the same thing.
Okay.
And they were like, the Indian. And I'm like, oh, of course.
It is the Indian Stuttering Association.
That's great.
We are the only one, though.
Yeah, right.
Right.
There's no Indian Stuttering Association.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I've never been to anything through the Indian Stammering Association. How does it compare to the National Stuttering Association?
In sort of a structure, well, I mean, or philosophy, I would say it's exactly the same. It's like a supportive organization for people who stutter in India, and that's it. Our like philosophy is sort of self-help, and we sort of believe in this this philosophy that the self is realized through self-effort. So we kind of think that with the support of everybody around you, and through, of course, through professional help and all that kind of support as well, you like all that stuff, support and professional help, just empowers you at the end of the day to help yourself, because as people who stutter, we all like have to take ownership of ourselves and of our stutter, and we ultimately can help ourselves. So our philosophy at TISA is that is a self-help philosophy, and of course we are open to anybody who stutters in India, or stammers in India, as it's called over there, because stammering is just stuttering with in British English.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have like 1,000 questions. I always say this, but I think because I've heard a little bit about you from Karen and Roisin, I think it would be just easiest to just ask you, maybe just to share a little bit about your story with this stuttering and how you got here today.
Sure. So I grew up actually most of my life outside of India. I was born in Hyderabad, which is in the south of India. And I left when I was 10 months old.
Okay.
I grew up sort of across East and Southeast Asia. Thailand, Philippines, Hong Kong, Japan, and China. And I started stuttering in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Third grade, 8 years old. I sort of, the story that I've always told myself is that there was a child in my class who stuttered, and I would copy him, and that's how I started stuttering. At least That's a story that, I've told myself. And now I'm sort of like realizing that that's probably not the case. I was just, you know, it's in my genes. Mm-hmm.
Or it's a story someone told you, you know.
Or it's a story someone told me, yeah. At some point, my parents may have met the teacher or something.
Yeah.
And that story would pass down. So ever since then, I've been someone who stutters just like yourselves. And I guess in class, I had a very tough time. With friends, I had a tough time growing up. And moving as well to new countries, to Japan and then to China. Most of the time, I tried to hide my stuttering.
Sure.
And that involved a lot of not speaking. Mm. And sort of changing words and being covert for a long, long period of time. Trying to speak fast to get everything out, all that. So I graduated high school in China, then moved to the U.S. for university. I went to University of Illinois. Again, throughout that experience as well, throughout the whole of university, I would hide my stuttering. Oh, and by the way, as well, I did receive some professional therapy, one time in Mumbai and one time in Japan. Both of those, though, were not at all the kind of therapy that's available today. It was more like in today's words, fluency shaping therapy.
Okay.
Than anything else, and they were basically saying that, you know, try not to stutter, slow down, be fluent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We all know that that's just crazy talk.
Well, we've all had that therapy, and in our journeys, it's in our personal experience, it's not something we do to manage our stuttering. Mm-hmm. Would that be accurate?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
From my own experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree as well. Like, I think, well, yeah, I mean, so, well, I'll keep, I'll just like, I'll just like, finish, sharing about myself, and then we can kind of like discuss maybe that, that idea that we just talked about.
Sure.
about that fluency is not the goal. Yeah, and then so but only those two times was when I had therapy, and they didn't go that well. And then in university, I didn't have, you know, like, I met the first person who I knew who stuttered at university. Wow. I never met anybody else before, and my school's never had a speech therapist at all. So I never received any help at school for it.
Maybe that was a positive thing, because lots of us have had lousy therapists. Karen's a speech therapist. I sort of am. Anyway, never mind.
You are a speech therapist.
Okay, I am.
Be proud.
All right. Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Soon to have you.
Yeah. So then I graduated from university, and then my father had this vision to open an Indian restaurant. So he retired, and at that time we were based in Guangzhou in China. So he wanted to open an Indian restaurant. I came back to help him. We opened the restaurant, and then I sort of worked at the restaurant, or like as a manager there for about 4.5 years. In that time, I also like hired like a manager as well, and then I was sort of just like doing overall stuff, and then, you know, I actually went through 3 different managers at that point. And it was a really good experience for me. As you guys can imagine, owning a restaurant or even working in a restaurant is just daily talking to customers, to employees, to everybody. So needless to say, it was a very challenging experience for me. Definitely every single day, I sort of struggled with my speech. Every single day, and by late 2012, I sort of like, you know, just like wanted to like get some maybe professional help or just see what's out there. So I Googled it and researched it, and then I found the American Institute for Stuttering and went there in Jan 2013 for the intensive.
Cool.
And I think that's when I sort of realized, or that's the first time I met so many people who stutter.
Yeah.
And since that program, I've sort of, accepted my stuttering since then, since a year and a half ago.
It's crazy how many AIS graduates there are. We all are AIS graduates as well.
Crazy that we only have AIS people on the show.
I didn't know that.
I didn't even know, like, Parker, that guy from Indiana, came on, and I didn't even know he had gone to AIS. And he's like, yes, I went to AIS. And I was like, we literally only interview people who go to AIS.
We have a problem. No.
So you should probably just go.
Everyone goes to AIS maybe, but but I mean, I love AIS, and I'm gonna be interning at AIS again. So I did the teen intensive. I was an intern there like a few weeks ago, and for Monday I'm gonna be intern there for the adult intensive.
Oh, cool!
You're gonna meet a friend of mine. Sorry to interrupt you. There at the I went to school at the University of Minnesota to graduate school, and I do like a week-long day camp for kids who stutter, and one of the grad students there is going to be an intern at AIS this month. His name's Gregory.
Okay.
So you said this month, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Like
starts
like
on Monday, right?
It does on Monday. Yeah. Day after
Small world.
And then have you met Mark too?
Oh, Mark, yeah, Bear. Mark Bear.
No,
he's
going
to be an intern
you're gonna,
there, too.
You're going to have a great month. You guys,
awesome.
You guys are such a good crew.
And then after AS Intensive, I'm going to be attending Camp Say.
You are?
What?
Yeah.
Me too.
You too?
Yeah.
Really? This is going to be an awesome month.
Oh, my goodness. So you're coming to camp for the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, what? My gosh.
Yeah. Are you going to be a bunk counselor and stuff? Yeah.
I think so. Like, I'm not sure. Like,
I don't really know what I'm doing yet either.
But what the official title is? But yeah, but I think so.
Dude, sweet.
How exciting! So we'll be seeing each other a lot.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. So what you just heard was another high five on the show. That's the second time that's happened this conference. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like we're derailing you.
I think a fluid conversation is always good.
Yeah.
so we sure get everybody.
Fluid, not fluent.
Yeah, fluid. I didn't say fluent. Yeah. Fluid. A fluid with disfluencies.
Yes.
So. What was I saying? Yeah, so at that time I like realized that they have like such, you know, the NSA exists, and during the intensive program when I was in New York for 3 weeks, first time in New York actually when I was there, I went to an NSA meeting, and I sort of then you know like that was the first time I had gone to a support group for people who stutter, and I was like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. I came back 6 months later to attend the Phoenix conference in Scottsdale. First NSA conference was last year. And then in September of last year, I joined or I found, I moved to Mumbai from Guangzhou because I actually sold the restaurant. And actually, after the intensive, I started to think about my life plans because I'm sure like many of you, that program sort of made me realize that my stuttering cannot hold me back from anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to think about it, and I thought that I would then apply for a master's program and go to school to study international public policy, go work for the UN. That was the plan. So I sold the restaurant in July, moved to Mumbai, and then my plan was to take my GREs and this August start grad school. But in September, I joined the Indian Stammering Association there, and when I say I joined them, like I attended their Mumbai chapter group, mm-hmm. and what it's called over there is just a self-help group, or Mumbai SSG is like the acronym. We have all these acronyms in TISA, so SSG stands for self-help group. So I attended their meeting. It was actually like an outdoor meeting in a park, like five of us. We were just talking and having a good time.
Is there more than one group TISA, or is it just that one group?
Well, so self-help group like just stands for like what you would call a chapter here.
And is there just one of those?
Oh, no.
Oh.
we like have like self-help groups, like chapters all over the country.
Oh.
There is one in Mumbai.
Gotcha.
And there's one in New Delhi and Bangalore and Hyderabad, other Indian cities.
Right.
Yeah. And then I got more kind of involved with them like over the course of a few months, and it's only sort of like July now, but I got more involved with them, and then I thought it'd be really cool to sort of organize them better. So I found a venue for our self-help group at the YMCA in Mumbai, and then you know like for free, and we now like have our weekly meetings there. We have them every week now. Wow. It will be every 2 weeks. I mean, I used to skip some, but I made it every week now. And since I was in Toastmasters, I sort of structured our self-help group a lot more like Toastmasters.
Okay.
So I created, I don't know if you guys know about Toastmasters, but they like have like two tracks and two manuals. They have a competent communicator manual and a competent leadership manual. Mm-hmm. So I created an effective communicator manual. I made this up. Mm-hmm. Toastmasters, don't sue me.
Cool.
And I sort of made like 10 projects. And I based those 10 projects on a similar program to what AIS kind of offers. Like the first project was like, what is stuttering? Second one was like understand your stutter. You have to like draw your iceberg and draw your stutter, talk and then present that. And then, you know, there was one on desensitization. There was one working on eye contact, one working on pausing. All those 10 projects, you kind of did those projects or completed them by giving a speech at the SSG meeting.
Wow.
So that's still going on. Like, even though I'm here, we have an executive board at the self-help group, president, vice president, education, exactly like Toastmasters in a way.
Yeah.
Because I love their model and it works. So it's still going on.
That's great.
And we have one, like our self-help group meeting is going to happen now tomorrow in India, in Mumbai. But yeah, so what else?
I have a question for you.
Sure.
And it's kind of a two-part question. How is the therapy situation in Mumbai, for example, in terms of like finding good specialized stuttering therapy?
It's not great, I would say. I'm not even like to be honest, I don't even know right now if there is a specialization for stuttering or fluency disorders in India. Mm-hmm. I've got to do more research there. We do have an All India Institute for Speech and Hearing that mm-hmm. does have people talking about stuttering, but I'm not sure if there's a specialization. Mm. Therapy itself, from what I've heard from all of our members in TISA. Oh, and we had a national conference in September. Wow. October last year in New Delhi. And at that point in time, I got to meet lots of people from India who stutter. Wow. It was only like 80 people, by the way. So much, much smaller. That's about a tenth the size of this conference. But we're having another conference soon, and I'll probably talk about that later. But from what I've heard from lots and lots of people, most of the therapies they go to are sort of based around trying to get you to not stutter anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's like even places called the Stammering Cure Center. This is a real thing. You can Google it, stammeringcurecenter.com or whatever, that promises that you come there and stay there for like 3 days or a week, and they'll make you cure your stammering and charge a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people from TISA have gone there. It's a place in India, or it's located in a place in India, and they've sort of just suffered. And of course, after the program, you feel great, but then it haunts you later. So therapy is not great. One of my purposes for coming here and doing the internship at AIS is to learn from them, and eventually I'd like to open a nonprofit center in Mumbai, starting in Mumbai, that basically is what AIS is doing here, and offering really good professional therapy in a good environment.
Yeah. I was going to say that it sounds like in these support groups you're finding a way to bring effective therapy and support to people in India, which is cool.
Yeah. I found though that like what we're doing right now, like in the self-help group, I think is great. But I found though that like the there is no sort of workaround or way around good therapy and like good professionals who like good SLPs. I've sort of I thought for a while that I could create this self-help group and make it very structured, and then that would be enough for people. Right. Like that would be therapy and support.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I've sort of, and again, this is my personal opinion that I think that self-help groups and support groups are great. And we should focus it more on support, mm-hmm. and then create places where you have really great professionals who have experience working with people who stutter and knowledge in stuttering, and let people go there to get the therapy, but also have these weekly support groups which are so important, because I think NSA did a survey I think a few years ago that said 84% of adults who go to therapy relapse. 84%,
mm-hmm.
Which basically means that therapy, and I heard this, I think, at the first talk called Stuttering Intervention by Trisha, I forget her name.
Zabrowski.
Mm-hmm. And she actually said that it's normal to relapse, and most people do relapse.
Yeah, it's kind of the nature of the disorder.
Yes, and that's why you have to have support. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so I think that I like to create a place like AIS in Mumbai, and also strengthen TISA to be somewhat like NSA is, just have these huge, huge and impactful national conferences, and strengthen the support groups in the various cities.
This is a little kind of unrelated question. I was just curious as to how you manage your stuttering. I feel like I hearing some voluntary stuttering, which I absolutely love, because personally, I feel like for me, that's the most powerful management strategy. But please comment.
I've gone way like back and forth on this,
okay.
like in the past year and a half, to be honest, because I just learned from like January of last year that it's okay to stutter.
Okay.
And for a long time I was like, okay, let me accept my stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of thought that after the program, I was like, okay, I accept my stutter. This is great. And I was sort of very confident, and I was like, I have this tool bag that I can pull tools out whenever I want. But slowly I started realizing that sometimes I was trying to pull a tool out, but it wasn't working.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a screwdriver not being able to screw any.
Just get stuck in the tool bag.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're trying to pull it out.
Yeah, just
it
doesn't come out. Yeah. You know? It's just like glued in there.
It's blocked by something. So I realized that the reason was I didn't fully accept my stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's been a challenging a year after the program, being like, I know what to do, but now how do I do it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been very, very challenging for me. And that's probably why I got really involved with TISA, because I was like, first of all, I want to help myself.
Yep.
And in that process, I just got very involved, and I was like, I'm in a position to help lots of people as well.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, how I manage my stuttering is sort of, I try to stutter. I try to voluntary stutter because actually, I mean, I keep going back and forth in my mind on this, but just this past week at the T intensive at AIS, like I was trying to be, again, I was trying not to stutter when I met the kids, because I was like, oh, like I'm an intern here. I've done the adult program. They're probably expecting that this guy is being able to manage his stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was trying not to stutter. And what happens when you try not to stutter?
You get really stuck.
Yes. One of my favorite things to say is that every time I try really, really hard to stutter, it's a disaster. You know, like that's the best.
Not stutter.
Every time I try really hard not to stutter, Did I say that wrong?
You said every time you try to stutter, okay. It's a disaster.
That's exactly not true. Yeah, every time I try really hard not to stutter, it's I just have all sorts of problems.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
It's
yeah,
the worst way for me to manage it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And at that program, I was trying to do that. Mm-hmm. And by like Tuesday, Wednesday, I was like about at the point where I was like, oh, I should sort of just give up because I can't even help these kids. Mm-hmm. What I thought. What was super like what sort of changed my mind about it and why I'm still here? I mean, it's only been a few weeks since the program, but so seeing the kids themselves embrace stuttering and voluntary stutter themselves and during the program we were teaching voluntary stuttering, mm-hmm. and saying, and we did the subway challenge with them. We went cool. to Macy's. We did the interviews, the Park Madison Square Park interviews, all that kind of stuff. And during that, and I sort of started to realize that, look, I mean, yeah, well, you can't fight it, and you have to be okay with disfluencies. And I read something very, very interesting in the AIS manual that really changed my perspective, was that stuttering is everything you do when you try not to stutter. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a while, and I was like, what does that mean? Stuttering is everything you do when you try not to stutter. So does that, you know, because like that's like using the word you're trying to define in the definition.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I love that quote too. And I think that there's a lot of truth there, but I know I do. I feel like I could poke some holes in it.
Yeah.
You know, Karen's like, yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, but like after I heard that quote and then after we like did the iceberg activity with all the kids and we filled it out with them on a piece of paper and we put it up, I sort of, how do I phrase this? I began to realize that, well, okay, sorry. So also in the AIS manual, right after that, it says that someone can have disfluencies in their speech, but if they don't have any negative thoughts or emotions towards their speech, they're not characterized as a person who stutters. Right. And I was like, what? Like, I thought if you like have repetitions in your speech, you're considered someone who stutters, or if you repeat, or if you prolong it, you're someone who stutters. But what this says was that if you don't have any negative thoughts or emotions towards your speech, and if you don't do anything or not do something because of your speech, because of stuttering, you're not characterized as a person who stutters.
I think the other important piece in that, though, is the loss of control.
Yes.
Because if someone's feeling loss of control but doesn't feel bad about that loss of control,
yes,
I think they still stutter if they can acknowledge that they're not in control.
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite Stutter Talk episodes of all time, I bet Peter will be so kind to link to do it on our show, was with this guy named Charlie Osborne, who's a speech language pathologist in Wisconsin. And he's not a stutterer, but like sometimes you'll hear him talk and you'll swear, you're like, is that guy stuttering? But he's not. He doesn't feel a loss of control ever. I mean, he speaks in a very forward moving manner. It's not like he gets in like long blocks or anything like that, but it's so interesting to hear that episode and hear him talk about it and being asked questions, because if there's a threshold that makes stuttering manifest itself, he's probably pretty close to it, but just never, he doesn't stutter, but he sounds like he does sometimes, right. It's right. Really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. And I think like my dad as well, like, is a similar way. Like when he speaks like on conference calls to his workplace, he's sort of like, I can swear he's stuttering.
Sure.
Cuz like he's like repeating sounds and repeating words all over the place. Mm-hmm. But to him, you ask him, he's like, I don't stutter. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to what you were saying Karen earlier about if you experience a loss of control, like, that's what defines stuttering. But what if you don't experience a loss of control? Like, mm-hmm. like what if you're okay with the disfluency, mm-hmm. and okay, it comes, but you don't actually experience loss of control.
But even if you're okay with it, isn't the loss of control still there?
Maybe, but if you don't, how do I say it? If you're not sort of thinking about the loss of control, like, say, okay, you know, if you're focused on what you're actually trying to say, the content, mm-hmm. and if you just have some repetitions in your speech, mm-hmm. Maybe at that point, scientifically, you could call that a loss of control. But for me, I'm still thinking about my content.
Right. I guess I'm defining loss of control as like the person feels like they're not in control.
Sure. Yeah, so exactly.
Sometimes I can be in a situation where I really don't care and I have as much time as I need and I stutter and I don't feel anything. I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel stressed. But there is still like, yep, this word's not going to come out. Right. And it's not a bad thing. It's just like I'm aware that I don't have control right now.
Right.
And haven't you guys experienced, what I would consider to be like sort of non-stuttering like disfluencies, which I think, you know, all fluent people are disfluent sometimes, where you are disfluent, but I don't feel a loss of control. So it's like, I feel like I've felt, certainly not on that one, I lost control on that one, but I've felt those times where I might be disfluent, but it doesn't feel like quote unquote stuttering, you know, whatever that phenomenon is, it doesn't feel like that.
Right.
Yes.
And it might not be.
Yeah. I don't think it is. It's probably just normal people disfluency.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, I guess like I took that quite that's that part like in the manual, like quite like literally or seriously. Mm-hmm. But I understand as well. If you sort of like experience a loss of control, it's probably stuttering. But what's even more sort of like eye opening for me was that if you don't have these negative thoughts and emotions towards stuttering, and if you don't do or don't do something like raising your hand in class or speaking up in group of friends, then like. And I sort of took that, and on that same day we did the iceberg, you know, and all that stuff. Like if you look at an iceberg, on the right hand side below the water is all thoughts and emotions, and left hand side is all the stuff you do or don't do because of stuttering. So my theory is, if we can shrink the iceberg under the water,
yep.
and leave the stuff on top, it's fine. Like you're gonna have like the disfluencies and prolongate and repetition, all that kind of stuff. It's fine, you know. But if you can sort of shrink the iceberg, I think that is the key.
Mm-hmm. And magically, it seems like the upper part sort of shrink. Maybe not. It doesn't completely shrink, but it does seem like there's less overt struggle. Or certainly less overt struggle and maybe even less stuttering.
Perhaps, but I mean, like, I think the struggle may reduce.
Mm-hmm.
The stuttering doesn't necessarily have to reduce.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter if it reduces or not, because mm-hmm. because stuttering and disfluencies are fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally mm-hmm. fine. But the secondaries and stuff could reduce.
Sure.
Since like, you know, like for me, when I stutter, usually I put my head down and close my eyes, mm-hmm. and sort of have that sort of block. And that is a direct result of shame and embarrassment to my stutter. So if I can work on those negative thoughts and emotions and sort of like shrink that iceberg below and leave all the repetitions and prolongation,
sure.
which is fine in,
yeah.
you know, which is fine in speech. That's like the key for me.
See, I remember leaving AAS. I went to AAS in 2009 and having the same feeling of like, I just like have to slowly chip away at that bottom part of the iceberg. And I remember getting to a point where I felt like I had. But I feel like there's something about the world and being different that every time you come into a new situation, a more challenging job, whatever it is, like that water is going to freeze up again. Mm. You know what I mean?
Way to stick like, with the analogy there.
I know, it's like a water and the iceberg.
That
was
cold.
It's going to get cold. The temperature's going to drop.
Sorry, go
it's
ahead.
A cold world. And that's going to freeze up again, which is sort of why I feel like once you're a person who stutters, you will probably always be a person who stutters. Whether or not even the top looks the same.
Yeah.
There's always going to be that process and that cycle. Maybe not. Maybe as we get older, that really goes away. But I can't see that going away for me, that continual cycle of getting comfortable and then having to do it over again, then having to do it over again, and like meeting yourself in that really uncomfortable place in your life over and over and over again. Which is kind of like not terrible to look forward to. It's actually like that I'm going to keep growing. I'm going to keep, you know, moving. But I remember feeling like, ooh, if I just get that bottom part in the next year, then like I'm going to be good.
Yeah.
And I haven't found that to be the case.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I think it's going to be a lifelong daily challenge. Mm-hmm. I think every day, and I think that's why like self affirmations are so important. Mm-hmm. I think that's why like voluntary stuttering, throwing in stutters randomly is so important, and support groups are so important.
Coming here and going
to NSA and going to TISA, SSG is so important. Mm-hmm. And listening to Stutter Talk podcasts is so important.
I feel comfortable enough with you where I can like comment on your overt stuttering, because I feel like this is, yeah, okay, you're laughing at me and giving me like a weird look, but like I feel like so everyone stutters in their own different way, but I feel like sort of a shared experience with you, whereas when I was seeing you speak in front of the large group situations where, you know, if you're in a moment of stuttering, you know, you would see the real, you know, authentic moment of stuttering, and then, you know, in your head, and be like, okay, let's try something different. And I love that, because that's what I do. I love it because that's what I do. No, it's, you know, where, you know, then you would play with it, you know, and then, you know, maybe change it so it was more voluntary of a stutter. And I just,
like,
you know,
very transparent when you stutter, and you are too.
Yeah,
you can see what's going on with you.
Yeah. So
Well, I can see everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I sometimes try to make my voluntary stutters look more authentic, but I feel like people can usually probably tell with some degree of accuracy which ones are authentic and when it kind of shifts in more of the voluntary range. I think it's kind of a fluid thing, you know. But I just is that an accurate observation or
sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think so. I think so. And it's interesting, as you said, you can see it cause that kind of like shows that, you know, I can like your iceberg is lifting, you know, like I can see your whole picture and you like don't like have to too much like you know buried negative emotions and thoughts in your head, but you're kind of, you know, showing it as it is.
That's interesting. It kind of makes the case for being like, if you're really struggling, being like, oh man, you know, where I feel like I almost feel like I can't do that, like in public sometimes, like I have to maintain calm and like appear confident, and really like maybe it's better to display that like frustration at the moment, or that like I'm gonna start over, you know. That's so interesting. I like that.
Yeah,
wait, I don't know if I understand. So you're saying
I guess the him just saying that, like, comparing it to the iceberg, where okay. if you can see more, the more that you can see the process,
yeah,
or the more that you show the mm-hmm. process, then maybe there's not as much painful burden on you.
Okay,
because you're not having to, like, you know, hold all of that in. Mm. You're like expressing it somehow.
Sure. Mm. The one thing I will say that I, you know, when I'm watching Dhruv speak, not necessarily in this context, but in, you know, speaking in front of 1,000 people or something, yeah. a little different.
I do it every day.
okay. but, you know, it's like not showing that emotion. Like you don't see Dhruv getting stuck and being like, oh, okay. Like, you know, it's like he, you know, so he's stuttering and then, you know, it's like, it feels like less of an evocative experience that's like causing you a great deal of emotion, but then you're able to make a change and play with it, you know? And that's like where I'm trying to get, or like where I think I'm reaching, where it's when the moment of stuttering happens, I feel less negative emotion or really any emotion at all, and it's more like, okay, let's move through, let's figure out how to move forward,
yeah,
rather than feeling shame or feeling bad about it, which yeah. I think kind of goes back to the iceberg analogy too.
Yeah, yeah, you know? I think it does as well. And I think as well, even if you do feel that that shame, or, you know, like you have feelings that are not. Well, if you have bad feelings, for example, like after you stutter. Okay, so yesterday I attended this talk by David Luterman. I don't know, you guys probably attended it as well.
Karen was there.
I did. It was the best. I think it was two it was. Days ago.
Oh, sorry. It's 2 days ago. I'm sort of on like one day right. conference. Something he said really struck me as well. And he said something like, exactly, feelings are neither bad or good. They just are. He also said behaviors, on the other hand, are bad or good. And you can judge behavior, but you should not judge feelings because they just are. And that really struck me because it was just like, okay, I'm having a moment of stuttering. I've lost control in front of 1,000 people and I feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, like, but of course, it's very easy to say, okay, because
I'm going to handle this well.
I've gone through many, 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 many experiences in my life where I'm in front of a group of people or with friends and I'm stuttering and I'm like, I feel bad. And that's like, it feels really bad. And mm-hmm. I want to go crawl into my bed.
Yeah.
And I do, and I have. But I think, number one, realizing that it's okay to stutter and be disfluent,
mm-hmm.
And that disfluencies are normal in speech, mm-hmm. and everybody's disfluent, and then also like hearing him talk about that feelings are neither bad or good, they just are,
mm-hmm.
and the key is to be aware of your feelings and realize, okay, I'm feeling bad at this moment, this is how it feels, but now behavior is what is sort of judged, or like behavior can be good or bad. So now what am I going to do? Am I going to speak more, or am I going to, keep quiet, yeah. or what?
Which in, you know, in turn is going to kind of influence your feelings, you would think, right? Because even though, you know, you're right, feelings just are, it's like your feelings from years ago when stuttering was really a negative experience for all of us, they're a lot less sharp, right? You know, like everything's really softened mm-hmm. in that regard. I don't know how, well, I mean, but you're right. It's like, you really can't control feelings, but maybe you can have a future influence over them. That's probably like the cognitive behavioral model approach, right, or something. Karen, you're a speech language pathologist.
That was sort of it. I don't know if I want to get into it right now.
Okay,
though,
yeah.
Because I want to leave soon.
Yeah.
Because it has now been 55
Oh,
minutes.
Wow. Gosh, the time just flies.
I would love to talk about that, but I feel like it would be more than a 2-minute conversation.
Yes. All right. Well, okay. Roisin's the person that always gracefully wraps things up somehow.
Yeah. Well, Drew, we're very happy that we're able to have you on the show. We have a lot of listeners from the show from India. And in the past years have gotten a lot of emails like, we're looking for resources. We don't have resources in India. We don't have support in India. And it makes me so happy. And, you know, and in awe of you for trying to create those for people in your country. So you're doing a very good thing, as you know.
Thank you. And I think as well, like, what you guys have been doing and what Peter Reitzes. Right, of course, it's Reitzes. has been doing with Stutter Talk is phenomenal. As you were saying, people in India are listening to it all the time, and that's great because that means that they're probably coming back and listening to it, and it's helping them in some way. Keep doing what you guys are doing. It's amazing, and thank you, Peter, for founding it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Woo.
Cool.
All right.
Yay.
So this is our last show from the NSA conference. It's been a great year. I think there have been some really cool workshops. We've had some really awesome shows.
I just want to say one last thing and maybe a second last thing. If you are a presenter at the NSA workshop and you TISA is going to be having a national conference from October 4th to the 6th this year. So first of all, you guys are all invited. It's close to Mumbai, and you can fly directly into Mumbai or New Delhi because they are major cities, and then we drive down. But contact me. My details would maybe be in this thing. Join the Indian Stammering Association Facebook group and just like us. And we have a private group as well for people who stutter. So you can join that too. It's very active. As you guys may be knowing, there's like 14 million people in India who stutter. Not all of them have internet and Facebook access, but a lot do. So our Facebook groups are very active. What I was saying though was, if you are a presenter at the NSA conference and you're listening to this, please get in touch with me. Whatever workshop you did, get in touch with me. If you think your material is good, and I'm assuming that you presented at NSA because you thought your material was really good. So get in touch with me. And I'd love to sort of have your workshop. Either you can fly down and do it, you can do a Skype session, or you can contact me and pass over your material. And we can kind of like do that same sort of session or workshop at the National Conference in October. So please do and get in touch with me.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the banquet.
All right.
And have a drink. All right.
Let's go boogie.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.